Hey, listener. Before we get started, there are a couple of things I need to point out about the podcast. First, this podcast is intended to serve as a study aid for students in the Texas Basic Peace Officer course and should not be used in place of classroom instruction. Second, you should not consider anything we discuss during the episodes as legal advice, and the opinions we express on the podcast are our own and are not representative of our employers or the Texas Commission on Law Enforcement. And finally, you should always consult your agency representatives and your county or district attorney's office before filing criminal charges based on anything you hear on the podcast. Are you a cadet in the Basic Peace Officer course in Texas? Are you an officer in another state planning to challenge the Texas Peace Officer licensing exam? If so, then this is the podcast for you. We are going through and breaking down the codified portions of the Basic Peace Officer course learning objectives to help you understand all the legal language. This is BPOC Basics. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the podcast where we break down the Basic Peace Officer course learning objectives. I'm Jim McGregor, and joining me again is Amy Byram.
Yep, I'm still here.
And we're going to be going over Chapter 8 of the Penal Code, which is General Defenses to Criminal Responsibility. So let's jump right in with Section 8.01, Insanity. 8.01 Insanity says that it is an affirmative defense to prosecution that at the time of the conduct charge, the actor, as a result of severe mental disease or defect, did not know that his conduct was wrong. So very important here, right off the bat, is that it is an affirmative defense to prosecution. If you're following along in your book, you want to underline, circle, highlight, put a star next to that insanity is an affirmative defense. And also make note that it is a not a medical diagnosis. There is no mental health term. It is not a mental health term of insanity. You're never going to be diagnosed as insane by a clinician in a psychiatrist's office. This is a legal term. And under B, the term mental disease or defect does not include an abnormality manifested only by repeated criminal or otherwise antisocial conduct. This means that just because you're a bad person doesn't mean you have a mental disease or defect. Just because you frequently make bad choices doesn't mean you have a mental illness. Okay, moving on to 8.02, mistake of fact. So here we are. Underline it, circle it, highlight it, put a star next to it. It is a defense to prosecution, only a defense to prosecution, that the actor, through mistake formed by a reasonable belief about a matter of fact, if his mistaken belief negated the kind of culpability required for the commission of the offense. Although the actor's mistake of fact may constitute a defense to the offense charged, he may nevertheless be convicted of any lesser included offense of which he would be guilty if the fact were as he believed. So, on mistake of fact here, I like to use an example of, you know, this is... Imagine that you walk into a room and you've got, you know, a laptop or a bottle of water, you know, something that you own and somebody else owns one just like yours. And you walk by and you think, oh, there's my laptop. I meant to put that in my backpack. Or there's my Yeti water bottle. And you pick it up thinking it's yours, and you walk out of the room with it. But it wasn't yours. It was a classmate's or a coworker's. Well, if it's not yours, that would be theft. You took it, and it was not, didn't belong to you. That means you appropriated somebody else's property unlawfully. But you thought it was yours. So it was a mistake of fact. However, if what you did would be an offense anyway, thinking that, well, it's not mine, but I think it belongs to somebody else, so I'm going to take it. I thought it was Joe's, but it actually is Susie's. I think I'm stealing Joe's laptop, but you actually stole some. It was Susie's laptop that you were stealing. Well, that's not going to be a defense. You can't say, well, I knew I was stealing it, but I was stealing. I didn't realize the one I was stealing was somebody else's. Then that would not be a defense. Right, Amy?
Right. And one of the other things, I'm not going to get too specific on this, but back on the insanity on 8.01, where he said to remember that it was an affirmative defense. If you remember back, I forget which section it was that we previously discussed, the difference between an affirmative defense is a defense that the defense actually has to prove. And a plain old defense with nothing in front of it, just a defense, is something that the defense can argue, but the prosecution has to get past it. So the burden is still on the prosecution, just to keep that clear.
Okay. It's a very important distinction between those two there. All right, moving on to 8.03, mistake of law. It is no defense to prosecution that the actor was ignorant of the provisions of any law after the law has taken effect. So this is extremely important. You cannot claim, well, I didn't know that that was against the law, and get away with whatever you want to get away with. Once the law takes effect and it is published, it is incumbent upon the people living in or traveling through the state of Texas to abide by the laws of the state of Texas. So people can't claim that, well, I just had no idea that that was the law here. They can't claim that as a defense to prosecution. Under B, it is an affirmative defense. Circle it, highlight it, underline it, put a star next to it. An affirmative defense to prosecution that the actor reasonably believed that the conduct charged did not constitute a crime, and, very important here, circle it, and that he acted in a reasonable reliance upon an official statement of the law contained in a written order or grant of permission by an administrative agency charged by law with responsibility for interpreting the law in question, or a written interpretation of the law contained in an opinion of a court of record, or made by a public official charged by law with responsibility for interpreting the law in question. Although an actor's mistake of law may constitute a defense to the offense charged, he may nevertheless be convicted of a lesser included offense of which he would be guilty if the law were as he believed. So an example of this would be something like here in, at least in North Texas, and I know also down in South Texas, they have like water restrictions that get published in the newspaper or on the different water district websites that the commissioners, county commissioners, may put out and say, you know, if your address ends with an even number, you can only water on certain days of the week. And if your address ends with a different number, then you can water on these days of the week. So if you went to the official website for the water regulators in your area that said, these are the days you can water, and you were watering on the days from the website that you were supposed to go to, that were the people that were in control of that, and you were watering on the day that you were reasonably relying on that information, and then you got cited from law enforcement for watering on the wrong day, and then you went to the website and said, well, this is what day I was supposed to water on, but the people who were managing the website had accidentally put the wrong information on the website, and that was the information you were relying on, that would be a mistake of law, correct?
Yes, and yes, and that's an affirmative defense. So you would have the duty to prove, to show, you know, a screenshot of the website or whatever and say, hey, here's yes, I broke the law, but here's, I was relying on this publication and here's my defense.
But the publication you were relying on was the official
yes
website from the water department, not, oh, I got it from my next door neighbor's Facebook page that said it was the direct water day, or I got it from
right
some other source that's not an official that has the responsibility for interpreting the law in question. It has to be an official publication, right. Not just because your next door neighbor told you that was the right watering day.
Right.
You can't claim a mistake of law because you heard that from word of mouth.
Yes, and this is one of those that you're really, basically, we pretty much never see examples of this in real life. So it's something you need to know for testing purposes, but in real life, this is not something you're really going to have to deal with.
All right. 8.04, intoxication. This one starts off with a very important word, voluntary. So voluntary intoxication does not constitute a defense to the commission of a crime. Evidence of temporary insanity caused by intoxication may be introduced by the actor in mitigation of the penalty attached to the offense for which he is being tried. When temporary insanity is relied upon as a defense and the evidence tends to show that such insanity was caused by intoxication, the court shall charge the jury in accordance with the provisions of this section. And for the purpose of this section, intoxication means disturbance of mental or physical capacity resulting from the introduction of any substance into the body. I think it's really important that when you're looking at this section that you make special note to understand that it says mitigation of the penalty attached. So that means you're not using this as a defense to prosecution. You're already been found guilty of whatever offense that has occurred, that the mitigation could be a reduction in the punishment.
Yes.
After you've been found guilty. And then you claim, well, I did whatever it is, right? I was intoxicated, I was impaired, and I did something, and I'm not trying to reduce my responsibility and say, well, I did it, and I shouldn't be held responsible, but I did it, and I only did it because I was intoxicated,
right.
So therefore I'm hoping to not be held as criminally responsible.
Right.
So it'll possibly lower the penalty.
Yes.
But it's not going to remove responsibility for it. Okay. 8.05, duress. It is an affirmative defense to prosecution that the actor engaged in the prescribed conduct because he was compelled to do so by threat of imminent death or serious bodily injury to himself or another. In a prosecution for an offense that does not constitute a felony, it is an affirmative defense to prosecution that the actor engaged in the prescribed conduct because he was compelled to do so by force or threat of force. Compulsion within the meaning of this section exists only if the force or threat of force would render a person of reasonable firmness incapable of resisting the pressure. The defense provided by this section is unavailable if the actor intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly placed himself in a situation in which it was probable that he would be subjected to compulsion. It is no defense that a person acted at the command or persuasion of his spouse unless he acted under compulsion that would establish a defense under this section. All right, there's a lot here, so let's break this down. Essentially, duress is saying that a person is, it's an affirmative defense to prosecution if this person was threatened by somebody else with imminent death or serious bodily injury to themselves or another person. So here we go with poor Jethro again. Jethro, somebody pulls out a gun or a knife and says, you know what, Jethro, if you don't go in there and rob that convenience store, I'm going to harm Ellie Mae here if you don't go in there and rob the store, right? That would be duress. Jethro had no inclination to go in there and rob that store on his own.
Right.
He's only doing it because if he doesn't, he fears Ellie Mae here is going to suffer serious bodily injury or death. That would be under A. So under B, it's saying that it is an affirmative defense to prosecution that the actor engaged in that conduct because he was compelled to do so by force or threat of force if it's not a felony. So if he's just going to go in there and steal a pack of gum out of the store, that would be a misdemeanor, not a felony. He's not using force against anybody. He's just going to commit a theft. Prosecution for an offense that does not constitute a felony. It's an affirmative defense to prosecution that the actor engaged in the conduct because he was compelled to do so by force or threat of force. So if he says, Jethro, I'm going to beat you up if you don't go in there and steal a pack of gum for me, then it would also be an affirmative defense under B, under 805B. And then under C, compulsion within the meaning of this section exists only if the force or threat of force would render a person of reasonable firmness incapable of resisting the pressure. So if Jethro's a great big strong fella and the guy that's threatening him is, I don't know, a 5-year-old kid, and he says, Jethro, I'm going to beat you up. And Jethro's, you know, looking at this little 5-year-old kid saying, I don't think that's really a serious threat, and I don't really feel threatened by this 5-year-old child that he's really going to beat me up if I don't go in here and rob this store, then Jethro can't really use that as an excuse as to why he went in and did that. That right. would not be duress.
Yes.
And then, let's see, we're at D?
Yes.
The defense provided by this section is unavailable if the actor intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly placed himself in a situation in which it was probable that he would be subjected to the compulsion. So Jethro can't say, I'm trying to join a criminal street gang, and I know that one of the conditions of joining this street gang is I have to commit some type of a crime to show my street cred. To earn my way into this gang.
Yes.
So I want to join, and so I'm going to go in and rob a store to show that I'm a tough guy. And he can't put himself in that situation and then be told by the gang leader, well, if you want to join our gang, you have to go in and rob this store. So then he gets caught robbing the store. And then says, oh, well, wait a minute. I only did it because this gang leader told me I had to do it. He can't claim that as well, I was under duress because
right.
he put himself in that position. And then D, it's no defense that the person acted at the command or persuasion of his spouse. So Jethro can't go to his wife and say, hey, why don't you go in there and rob that store? Unless Jethro's just a really bad spouse and really did threaten his wife with serious bodily injury or death if she didn't go in there and do it.
Right. So in that case, the wife couldn't be charged because she was under duress. If the only way she could be charged is if he just said, hey, wife, why don't you go rob the convenience store? And she said, okay, well, you're my husband. I'm going to do what I'm told. Then, yeah, she could be charged. But if he threatened her with death or serious bodily injury, and meant it, then no, she would be under duress when she did that.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Entrapment. This is a very frequently misunderstood law. A lot of people, at least in the public, think that entrapment is anytime the police are involved in anything.
Right. That everything is entrapment.
Everything is entrapment, and it's so far from the truth. So let's read the law, and then let's talk about it here. 8.06, entrapment. It is a defense to prosecution that the actor engaged in conduct charged because he was induced to do so by a law enforcement agent using persuasion or other means likely to cause persons to commit the offense. Conduct merely affording a person an opportunity to commit an offense does not constitute entrapment. And in this section, law enforcement agent includes personnel of the state and local law enforcement agencies, as well as of the United States and any person acting in accordance with instructions from such agents. All right, so entrapment. So if we take a law enforcement officer and we have them go stand on the street corner and they pose as a drug dealer and they're merely standing there pretending to be a drug dealer, affording people the opportunity that are predisposed to looking for somebody to buy drugs from, then that's not entrapment.
Correct.
Somebody drives up and says, hello, are you selling drugs? Can I buy some drugs from you, Mr. Person that looks like you might be selling drugs on the street corner that happens to be an undercover police officer, and they get arrested for trying to buy drugs from this undercover police officer, that would not be entrapment.
Correct.
Same thing as if this police officer stood on the street corner posing as a prostitute.
Yes, same thing.
And somebody drove up and said, hello, person standing on the street corner. I'm interested in your
services.
Prostitution services of some sort. What might it cost me for your prostitution services? And this undercover police officer said, well, it's going to cost you this much money. Let's negotiate a deal. And this person says, all right, sounds like a good deal to me. And therefore, this money exchanges hands. And then that person gets arrested for soliciting a prostitute. Even though the actual act doesn't take place, they've solicited this deal. They can get arrested.
And not entrapment.
And it's not entrapment. What would be entrapment would be if a police officer went to somebody and said, hey, I think that house over there on the street corner, I think they're selling drugs out of that house. And they know me. They know I'm a police officer. They're going to recognize me. So here's $50. It's a marked, I have the serial number written down. It's a marked bill. I need you to go over there and buy some drugs so that we can get a warrant to go in there and arrest these people. So I send this confidential informant person, this innocent, well, or not so innocent, but I send this person over there to buy drugs from the known drug house. And when the person that I sent over there with the money comes back with the drugs in their hand and say, here you go, I bought the drugs that you sent me over there to buy, and I now arrest him for possession of drugs. That would be entrapment.
Yes.
Because I told him to go do it, and he's thinking he's working on my behalf.
Yeah.
That he's working in conjunction with the police, but I really set him up, and then I charged him with a crime.
Right.
That's entrapment. So hopefully that's a pretty good example that will clarify that for all of our listeners. Merely affording people the opportunity to commit a crime is not entrapment. Same thing if I set up a bait car, and I put a car out there, I leave the car in a parking lot with keys in the ignition, and I sit and hide in the bushes and wait for somebody to come along and say, ooh, look, a car with keys in the ignition, easy to steal. And they jump in there and try to drive away in it. And then I sweep in and arrest them for stealing this car. I didn't put a sign on the car that says, please take me. That's not entrapment.
Right.
All right. Okay. 8.07, age affecting criminal responsibility. A person may not be prosecuted or convicted of any offense that the person committed when younger than 15 years of age, except. So let me just pause right here to all of our listeners and just tell you a little factoid here about the penal code and the way that the state writes laws. So the penal code is written in such a way where they'll, in a one sentence, they will say, this is the law, in black and white. And then they will proceed to have five paragraphs telling you all these different ways that it's not really the law. It's the law except for all these other things. So be patient and understand that it's never always 100% one way. So we're gonna tell you that you cannot be prosecuted or convicted for any offense that a person committed when they are younger than 15, except for, about seven different examples. So let's go through these seven different examples here. Number one, perjury and aggravated perjury, when it appears by proof that the person had sufficient discretion to understand the nature and obligation of an oath. So that's a whole lot of fancy language to say that they knew what it means to tell the truth.
Yes.
Okay. So if they are younger than 15 and they know what it means to promise to tell the truth and then they lie, they can be charged with perjury or aggravated perjury.
Yes.
And we'll get into what perjury and aggravated perjury mean later on. Number two, a violation of a penal statute cognizable under Chapter 729 of the Transportation Code, which 729 of the Transportation Code is operation of a motor vehicle by a minor, which means a person that is younger than 17 years of age. So if you are 16 or 15 years of age and you are operating a vehicle and you commit an offense that has a punishment where you can be sentenced to imprisonment or confinement in jail. This is all other number two. So there's a lot here. You're violating a law in the transportation code, and you're 16 or 15 years of age, and it has a punishment where you can be put in jail for. So really, there are only two. Well, there are three. But reckless driving, failure to stop and render aid, or racing on a highway. These are really the three that come to mind while I'm thinking about it right now. So those are the three things I can think of off the top of my head. Racing on a highway, reckless driving, failure to stop and render aid. If you are under the age of 17.
Right. So if it's one of those three things,
and
then you're not, because that's the except for.
Right. If you're younger than 15.
Right. So you can be held accountable for a violation of a law under that, unless it's one of those three that you just said, because it says except for conduct where you can be sentenced to imprisonment or confinement in jail because
right.
They don't want minors of that age to be stuck
correct.
In jail. Yes.
Right. So you can basically, you can get a ticket, but you can't get put in jail.
Exactly.
All right, number three. A violation of a motor vehicle traffic ordinance of an incorporated city or town in this state. So these are going to be, again, traffic ordinances that cities enact. So these are going to be no right turn on red, diagonal parking, places where they put up signs that say no U-turn, city ordinance, traffic ordinances. Number four, a misdemeanor punishable by a fine only. So these are going to be Class C misdemeanors, theft, criminal mischief, smoking, tobacco, penal code violations that have a Class C misdemeanor punishment. Number five, violation of a penal ordinance of a political subdivision. These are going to be like leash laws and other city ordinances, fireworks in the city limit, things of that nature. Number six, violation of a statute that is or is a lesser included offense of a capital felony, an aggravated controlled substance felony, or a felony of the first degree for which the person is transferred to the court under the family code for prosecution if the person committed the offense when 14 years of age or older. So these are going to be juveniles that have committed a crime and then fall under the juvenile justice system, but then get certified as an adult to be tried as an adult in an adult criminal case, but only for the most serious of crimes. Again, capital felonies. An aggravated controlled substance felony is a first degree felony that carries a higher punishment than the standard minimum 5-year punishment. Capital felony or an offense for which the person is transferred, again, this is another juvenile being tried as an adult. No person in any case may be punished by death for an offense committed while the person was younger than 18. So we do not have, there's no circumstance in which a child or a person under the age of 18 can receive the death penalty. So it doesn't matter that they're an adult or over 18 once they get caught. So if I was 16 years old when I committed the crime, but I didn't get caught until I was 22. They didn't figure out it was me until many, many years later. The fact that I committed the crime when I was 16 means I cannot get the death penalty even, you know, years and years later.
Correct.
Notwithstanding, a person may not be prosecuted or convicted for an offense described by section A4 or 5, which was misdemeanor punishable by fine only, or violation of a penal ordinance of the political subdivision, which was the leash law or the fireworks, that the person committed when younger than 10. So pretty much if you are younger than 10, you can't be held criminally responsible for pretty much anything. A person who was at least 10 but younger than 15 years of age is presumed incapable of committing an offense described by 4 or 5, which was all Class C misdemeanors, punishable by fine only, and violations of penal ordinances of political subdivisions, other than an offense under a juvenile curfew ordinance or order. So they can get in trouble for being out past curfew if the municipal or political subdivision has a curfew. But that's the only thing they can be cited for if they are under the age of 10. This presumption may be refuted if the prosecution proves to the court by a preponderance of the evidence that the actor had sufficient capacity to understand that the conduct engaged in was wrong at the time the conduct was engaged in. Prosecution is not required to prove that the actor at the time of engaging in the conduct knew that the act was a criminal offense or knew the legal consequences of the offense. Is there anything you want to add to this?
Not particularly. This is another one of those things that you just really don't see very often. The four and five, you don't really get a lot of situations where you're going to have kids between the age of 10 and 15 being held responsible for Class C misdemeanors and other types of city ordinance violations. You don't see that very often. But again, whenever you do, these are the rules for that.
Yeah, I think it is important, though, that we do touch on the fact that, you know, you will come across juveniles, and you need to make sure that you're not citing them, writing them tickets when you can't, right? And that you know right. when you need to call their parents and release them to their parents without citing them for criminal action when the law doesn't allow for that. So
right.
It's important that you know it. All right, well, that concludes our Chapter 8 review here. So be sure and join us for Chapter, what are we next, Amy?
We're doing 12 chapter, next.
Chapter 12's next. All right. Well, join us in Chapter 12. We'll talk about the different classification of offenses and all the different penalties that are associated with that.